Dieser Vogel ist auf Englisch.
Hello and welcome to Was ganz anderes. In this podcast, I talk to people who studied a classical instrument, but then decided to take a different path. Anyone making that choice is often asked, "So, what are you doing now?" This podcast is the answer. Something completely different. What leads someone to leave behind years of musical training, or at least set it aside? And what kind of life can come next? I'm Justus Macher, a trained bassoonist who shares many of the experiences my guests talk about. Because not long after finishing my studies, I too decided to put the bassoon back in its case. Yeah, hello and welcome to Was ganz anderes, the podcast from and for people who studied music and are now doing something very different. Today's episode is special for two reasons. The first is, as you might have noticed, it is in English, so that's not my mother tongue, very special. But even more special, the episode is because of my guest, and her name is Lauren Nucky. Lauren, welcome.
Hi, Justus.
So we've met in Berlin in 2008.
Yes.
Lauren, what were you doing when coming to Berlin?
So I was in Berlin for my Erasmus kind of 6 months playing the oboe. So I met you obviously playing the bassoon, which was very nice. And I remember the first time I met you because I was in the practice room just for oboe and bassoon. And you came in and I tried very poorly to speak some German and didn't realize how good your English was. So that was good when I found that out, but I did try. But yes, I was there from October to February, I think, that year, which was great. Yeah, I loved Berlin.
Studying with Professor Gletzner back then,
yes.
Who has now retired and is very happy. He does painting, as far as I know. I would like to know, when thinking about your oboe studies back in London as well, how was your mindset? How was your goal? What was your goal when starting to study music? And I'm asking for a particular reason. And this now has to be described in a feeling of mine, because when I think back about my own career path in the music world, in Germany, you have a lot of orchestras. You have like every small town has its orchestras, more than 50 orchestras, I think, right now, which makes it somewhat achievable in the mind of a young student that, okay, there are 50 orchestras, each has at least 3 bassoons. The chances are somewhat there to get a job. For you, was your main goal to become an orchestra musician, or did you study music because you loved it so much, or what was it?
Yeah, I think this is a really good kind of point and question, and especially being in England, it's very different to Germany. So I loved music, obviously, like through the teenage years, and I think you get to kind of 16, 17 and have to make these big life decisions about what you're going to study. And for me, it was music. My second choice was maths because I enjoyed that as well. But I thought, well, I love the playing. I'd love to go and play in an orchestra. And I think when you're that age, with how things are in England and at that time and jobs not being as many as Germany, of course, you don't think about it. So at that age, I didn't think. I just thought, oh, that's the step. If I try and go to music college and then see what happens. And then you realize how hard it is to even get a job in an orchestra, the line. But yeah, it was the love of music. I loved playing in orchestras and that side of things. And I just wanted to kind of further expand that with my studies.
Yes. So yeah, from my personal view, it's also like this, even in Germany, you come to the university and around you, you rarely see someone failing, but not because of that's not happening, but somehow you blend it out, or you just don't want to see it. And now if I look back and look at the people who studied with me or did their finals with me, I think less than 50% actually got a permanent position in an orchestra. So you started to study music and just thought, okay, I love this so much, I want to work within the industry or have something to do it for, and let's see what comes.
Yeah, I was definitely very naive and just coming as a child, I suppose. When you're under 18 and you I was a bit clueless and came from the countryside. So I'd been to London on a school trip, but I just thought, oh, you know, you think it's going to almost be not easy, but because you've chosen that path, it will all just work out. You'll work hard, you get a job in an orchestra. And I think when you get there, you're becoming an adult and you're suddenly realizing life is not as black and white as that, I suppose. You don't just put in the work and get a job. Maybe as you've done in your school exams, if you've worked hard, you get a good grade and then you go to the next step. So I think, yeah, it's kind of realizing that, okay, this is actually quite tricky to go down the music route.
And was it already during your studies where you thought, oh, okay, this is not, I don't know, not working out is not the correct term if you didn't have like a clear goal when starting, but when was the first time where you thought, oh, maybe it's not going to be the orchestra or maybe not teaching? I remember you also learned to teach violin. Is it correct?
Yes. Well, that violin was the first instrument I played before oboe. My violin, I did get quite far, but then I chose to study oboe at music college. So yes, I would say it's not that I thought the whole way through music college I wouldn't do this. It was more actually I thought, oh, I would really love to play. So definitely the first 3 years, and when I was in Berlin, you know, I was on that track to think, right, I'd love to go into performing. And then I think in my final year, in that fourth year, and you have to think about what is next. Am I going to stay and do a master's the next year and carry on and all of that? And I think it made me reflect, yeah, and just actually go, okay, do I want to be a performer? I enjoyed it so much and I loved the playing, but there was a side to it for me, not about kind of not feeling good enough, but I always felt quite a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't played in, you know, the top orchestras or anything like that yet. And I had some friends that were already doing that, but I didn't know if that pressurized performing situation was necessarily for me.
Yep.
So I think it was good. I very almost stayed and did a master's and carried on studying. And I think it wouldn't have been the right thing for me. So I took some time to think, and I ended up training as a music teacher was my next step. So
for the master's?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That. And that was, I mean, I might have ended up down that route anyway, but one of my best friends at music college, Kaja, she is so lovely, but clarinetist as well. So we were in, you know, all the chamber music, we were in a wind quintet together, but she knew from, I think earlier on, that she wanted to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So she was kind of set to go. And she was the one that said to me, why don't you think about teaching? Because I was a bit, oh, what do I want to do? Do I want to stay? Da, 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 da. So she actually said about that. And I applied and got into this master's. And that's kind of where the next route naturally went.
And was this like the same university where you just enrolled in the next program or?
No. So they don't do teaching there. So this was in London as well, but it's one that specializes more in teaching, but it's also linked to another one of the London music colleges. So I was at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, and then Trinity College London. I did my teaching through there and Greenwich University. So.
For me, I can very clearly say when I started to think about doing something else was after my internship in the Deutsche Oper for 2 years, because there I recognized that I didn't like the atmosphere too much. It was not too much about music anymore and yada yada. But this did not make me quit, but it was the first time where I thought, oh, maybe I don't need to do this for a long time. And then the seed was planted and then it outgrew. And nobody I talked to for this interview or other people who stop doing music, nobody has one reason. Everybody has like a lot of reasons. So, but for me was what this, like this experience working in a professional orchestra.
It's interesting hearing your experience and how you were really set until you were there in the situation.
Yeah.
Performing all the time. And I think it's also that crossover of becoming an adult and in charge of your own life post-studies, because in university, you're still kind of in this bubble of everything's looked after, you're safe, and then suddenly you're in the world and you can make your own decisions. And if it's not the right thing for you, then...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, especially, I mean, if looking back, and this should not be too much about me, but I feel that when you were playing in a professional orchestra, you could not decide anything anymore. Yeah, you can just decide to play good or not, because you can practice or not. But like I always say, if I could have studied longer and getting paid for it just to study, I would have done it. But yes, it's because it was so much fun. I could learn so much. I could decide where I want to grow in terms of musicality or whatever. I can understand if you're sitting in an orchestra, you know all the pieces and your neighbor smells. Where's the fire? Yeah. So then you studied to become a teacher. But yes, Lauren, if I look at your Instagram page, I don't see any teaching photos. What's going on?
I mean, I'm older now, you know, it's been a few years. Yeah, so shall I talk from the teaching to the next step?
Yes. So the what I find interesting especially is the point where you really did something in terms of I'm looking to do something else. Yeah, the first thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so for me, it was quite a few years later. So I trained to be a teacher. That was 1 year. And then I got a job over in the Caribbean, which was really nice. So I'd done the London thing for 6 years. I think coming from the countryside, I was ready to not be in London. Like, I loved it, but you leave university, it's expensive. And
yeah,
if your work is not that, if you don't need to be there, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, got a job over in the Caribbean. And
as a teacher?
As a teacher, yeah. Yes. I got a full-time job. Actually, with the friend I spoke about already, Kaja, she also got a job. So we moved over there at the same time, which was great. And we were in our early 20s. So I was 24, moving to a Caribbean island to teach music. So,
sounds good.
It sounds good. And some of my best years, it was a great time. And kind of being in your 20s and, yeah, being on an island teaching music, it was lovely. The job was great. I had a couple of different jobs while I was there. So I did 4 years in one teaching job, 4 years in another teaching job. And it was during the second one that I knew that I eventually would want to move back to the UK. I think for most people, you're always drawn back to where you're from, and especially if your family,
yeah,
are there, and you, as family get older and all of that, you want to be around more. And I think I knew that teaching wasn't for me forever. So I would see some other teachers at school, maybe, not necessarily the older ones, but you would see some that are older and they didn't seem to necessarily be happy. And maybe they were stuck, like it could be in any job, but kind of in the teaching world. So yeah, I definitely took some time to think, right, what do I want? What else can I do? What am I good at? What do I enjoy doing? So yeah, that brought me to photography, because that's something, like a lot of us, photography we do on the side. You know, so many people have a camera and they love taking it traveling, or photos of friends and blah, 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 blah. So yeah, I looked at my photography and thought, is this something that I can make money from or work mm-hmm. as? And it was very much a dream, I suppose. I had to think about, well, what avenues can you make a career from photography? You know, because at that time I was very much taking travel photos. I was diving a lot, so lots of underwater photography, which I loved. Mm-hmm. Lots of landscape things. And in that field, that it's very, very, very hard to make a career from that. You know, just having your travel photos. So,
yep.
So I was looking, and then I came across kind of wedding photography and photographing people. So I thought, well, let's have a go. I'll practice on some friends. I'll, you know, set up some kind of photo shoots on the beach and see if I like it. See if they have a good time, blah, blah. So yes, did that. Absolutely loved it.
Was it for this suite that you started to do, like going deeper into the photography route? Was it like during teaching, or did you say, no, I stop now teaching to full focus on this?
I was still a full-time teacher.
Okay.
So yeah, so it was very much in the evenings, at the weekend. I think like for a lot of people when they're trying to start another business, you put in all your effort in your free time.
Yeah.
But I still needed that financial security, I suppose. Job security, because then you can actually fund starting up a business, because there are always costs. So yeah, so that would have been in it was kind of 2018, 2019 that I was testing the waters, as you would say. Yeah, and just thought, I'll see how it goes. Yeah, so it was a lot of fun on the side. And maybe I didn't even know if it would become a thing that would take over. So I was enjoying doing it on the side. I thought, oh, maybe I can do a bit less teaching and a bit of photography in a long time, you know, maybe down the line. You don't know what's going to happen. But yes, then we got into COVID.
I remember, yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yes, yes.
Yes. So 2020, I was still a full-time teacher, so still in the Cayman Islands.
Yep.
But I already knew, so before COVID, that I would be moving back to England in the summer of 2020. So I already had a teaching job that I was coming back for.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm.
And I had some bookings for photography. So I had a few weddings booked by now. So the teaching job I was coming back to was only 3 days a week. So I was going kind of part.
Yep.
Like this. Now, obviously, then COVID happened. I still moved back. Photography and weddings stopped because people weren't allowed to get married and it was all of that. Whenever I could, I would practice and market and set up a website. And I was trying to go as all in as I could, even though things were hard.
Could you even teach? Was it allowed?
We could. It was a lot of online for some weeks and then in person. It was a mixture. So we were in and out of school. All the days that I was not teaching, I was really pushing the photography because I'd come back to a school and it was fine. But I think I'd come in with the mentality that I'm not going to be here very long. I kind of wanted to go and push the photography, and my heart was not in the teaching anymore. Even though I still went and I was doing a good job, but I think my heart knew, right, when is this kind of phase of my life stopping? And I can go into the next one. I'm just thinking age-wise, I would have been... Yeah, I was a kind of 32, I think, at the time. So that kind of age. And they do say that life goes in kind of 10-year cycles sometimes. So I feel like it had been my 10-year teaching cycle and I was ready to branch off into the photography. So COVID happened, weddings got cancelled. But then once weddings started again, all of the weddings that would have been in 2020 or 20, they were all going later. So suddenly... there's more weddings and there's not as many photographers for the weddings, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So it meant I was meeting other photographers who would then recommend me to couples and I would get bookings. So it was very helpful for me to get those early bookings. And then once you're booking and then they recommend, and then it just rolls from there. And it took off in 2020. 21 was when I started, but 22... it really took off. And yeah, I went full time in January of 22.
So for this phase of shifting from the music world to the photography world, I still have one or two questions. And one that interests me like kind of the most is how and when did you start communicating it to other people that you are at least thinking about doing something? And how was the reaction? Because I can imagine, and until now, I didn't get the feedback from an interviewee I had, that especially if you go hardcore into the orchestra career or maybe even soloist, that you invest like 20 of your first 25 years in the music education and parents pay a lot and support you how much. And then somebody says, no, I'm doing something else, that there is at least the possibility that someone will say, oof, why did I have all of this stress with you, my son, for the first 20 years, or my daughter in your case? Why are you not doing this anymore? How was it with you, with your family and or your friends? I can imagine how it went.
A really great question. And actually, I suppose something I'm lucky that I haven't had to think about it much, which means that my family have always been very supportive. Yeah, and I don't know. I suppose because I did music and then decided to take this job abroad, they have always been very supportive. And even if my parents aren't, you know, musicians, I haven't come from they studied music, I've gone into music. So when I wanted to study music, I'm lucky that they were really supportive, because I don't know in Germany if it's the same, but there is a lot of emphasis from when you're in the younger schools to go into something academic and, all the creative subjects. some parents do push their children away from studying them. And yeah, it's hard, and they're getting pushed back. But I was lucky that my family, when I said I wanted to study music, there was no question of, oh no, don't do that. So that was great. And yeah, I feel like it was the same with the switch. I mean, maybe, I suppose I always, whatever ideas I have or want to do, I'll kind of say, and they go along with it, which is really nice. So it's nice I haven't had to think about that. I mean, you know, behind closed doors, I'm sure sometimes family probably worry. But my mentality has always been, if there's something you want to do and you can financially kind of support yourself, you're not, the only person that will be affected is you. So yeah. Give it a go, give it a try, as long as you can back it up and you've got a house to live in or all of that kind of stuff. Just give it a go, because you don't know. If it fails, it fails. It doesn't matter.
For some, it's my own experience. It was like it goes a long line of women in my family. My grandma was a really independent woman, and she gave this to her daughters, my mother. And she also raised us to be independent. So I didn't even think about too much what my family thought about when switching, because it is my thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's amazing. And it makes me feel, like you, probably really lucky that our families we haven't had to worry about even having that conversation with them, I suppose. You can almost say, this is what's happening, you know.
Some of my, at least some of the like little bit far family, what they told me was, okay, Eustace, you are now 26. You could have paid into the retirement insurance already for 4 years. Yeah. So if you have stopped earlier, but it was not about the effort or the money I invested in it, but rather my, you know, being secure when you retire in 40 years.
Yes. Yeah.
And how was it? The other question I have, especially for the switching time, would be, did you or do you miss the instrument, playing music very much? Or was it a fade out with the teaching anyway?
I do. I really do miss playing the oboe.
That's the first time I hear something like this.
Oh, really? But I wonder
no,
if...
No, because of the oboe, sorry.
Wow. It's hard because it's an instrument that... Playing on your own and doing solo stuff for me is not as enjoyable. So for me, it's about the orchestral playing.
Yeah.
And locally to me, there are some local orchestras, obviously not professional ones, more kind of amateur or high amateur, that kind of thing. But there's no space. So, you know, the oboes, they have two oboes. So I have been a few times as a dep, you know, when there is space available and we'll go and play, and that's lovely. But I wish now that photography is the main job and that's, you know, taken over my day-to-day life, I wish that I could still be doing orchestral playing as like the hobby. Like, it switched around. So I think for me, I know for some people, they go cold turkey and just that's it. Is that for you or do you play? Yeah.
I don't have an instrument, you know.
Ah, you sold it.
Yeah, I had to. It wasn't mine. I bought it on a loan and I had to pay it back.
So that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. Actually, that was one thing when I did change over and was going kind of all in with photography. My mum would ask me, she was like, oh, have you got your oboe out recently? And, you know, you'd be there kind of teaching all day, every day and trying to do the photography. And I didn't make the time. I suppose we can always make the time, but I didn't make the time. But it's the practice of the oboe. If you had nothing you were practicing to perform for, it's not as fun, right? Sitting in the practice room and...
I enjoyed it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So maybe that's another step for me. I need to find time to play properly again. Whether it's my friend Kaja, apparently she's featuring lots in this podcast. She also moved back to England a couple of years ago. And we live like 15 minutes from each other.
Cool.
Yeah. Right. Which is lovely. So maybe it's that we get together and, you know, clarinet and oboe and find a flautist or something. But I do. Like, the playing I always very much enjoyed. I think it was always, for me, the thought of the pressure of the performing. I think that was probably my reason, my main reason. Because I didn't go as far as you. So obviously you were playing professionally.
Somewhat.
But you were in that world, like you said, on the day to day. And I think that's what you said made you realize it wasn't necessarily the playing, but it's just the being in that world maybe isn't the right thing for you.
Yeah. But I have to add like a small note. I did the internship in the Deutsche Oper from 2010 to 2012, and then I continued for 4 more years. So it was not immediately. Okay. So yes. I did all the auditions afterwards, and I'm not sure whether if I have gotten a job during an audition, if I would have stopped. I can't tell. Yeah, because of financial security, you maybe would have gotten when succeeding the trial year, but it was not. I noticed it and then immediately stopped. This wasn't the case.
Can I ask how? I know we spoke at the beginning about jobs in Germany and when you go in to study music, and maybe there's more of a chance because I think did you say there's 50 something?
Something like this, yeah.
And I think in England it's maybe 15-ish. Yeah. I remember, so my other half, Tom, who you know, musician, of course, but I remember we were talking about this once and how it feels like it makes more sense for people to study in Germany, for example, because it seems on the outside like there are more opportunities. But does it mean that actually there are way more people studying music? So it's still as competitive, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So there are too many people in Germany studying to be a musician. And the number I heard once was that more than 50% of all state-funded orchestras worldwide are based in Germany. So,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, in America, you have the big five are only, I think, state-funded.
Yes.
And then for the other countries that are like Western, because we play Western music, there are not too many that have the same system. So yeah for me it was when I don't miss the bassoon too much because I stopped playing directly after my master's, like my final last concert. And it went okay. I was happy with it, so, and I think I was on my peak bassoon level at this point.
Yes, of course.
And then I started doing something else. I did an internship in the public relations at the Hanover State Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And I did like 40 hours a week. And then I had one gig still in September. So 2 months after I had my recital. And then it was like very simple woodwind trio with piano, some opera stuff, arrangements. I started practicing 1 week ahead of this gig and was terrible. Yeah, because the embouchure I had, it felt like I had no muscles in my lips. I
mean, of course, when you've had even a small break,
And I knew how it should have felt. It was not the sound, actually, because maybe the break was too short to ruin the sound. But it was like, shit. So this is not good anymore. And I know how it should work, but it doesn't. And then I thought, okay, I can't do this. I can't do this like on a hobby level anymore because it doesn't make sense. Because if I work 40 hours a week, I really need to put in 1 hour a day at least to just hold any kind of level I'm used to do it. So I gave myself, when changing, I gave myself a year to see whether it's working without the bassoon or not. And it worked very good. And then in 6 months in, I sold the bassoon.
Yeah. It makes sense. And I think you did the right thing, almost going cold turkey, but still making sure. So giving that time to go, okay, I'm feeling happy. This is the right stuff for me.
Yeah.
But you are so right with is the stamina with playing an instrument.
Yeah.
And when you know, like we've all had the top level we've got to, wherever that is.
Yeah.
And I think it's knowing that unless you're going to be putting in that daily practice, you will not be at that level. Like, sadly, you will not be able to stay at that level if you've got 40 hours work doing something else. You can't. So, it's hard because it's the feeling. It's definitely... this is woodwind specific, obviously, but like that feeling of knowing how it should be, but necessarily being there without the practice.
So, Lauren, we are looking at you and your career today.
Yes.
So you are working a full-time wedding photographer.
Yes, I am.
Yes. Very nice. Yes. You didn't photograph my wedding, but this is my fault.
Well,
sorry.
I suppose.
And it was pre-career shift.
I didn't get the message. So
maybe check your post box.
It's there somewhere.
But I would like to try it and see to connect your job right now. If you can connect it to your learnings or your development when being a musician. So is there something where you say, okay, I can, I know it's a little bit a diffuse topic, but is there something where you say, okay, I learned this, be it soft skills, may it be hard skills I learned during my preparation of becoming a musician, I can use now in my daily job?
Yes, definitely. Well, I think the first thing I always think about as a rough subject topic area, when studying music, like if we go back to school, and probably the same for you, musicians come under that creative bracket, right? You go into music because you love creating, and quite often musicians are good at art as well. Actually, I really can't draw or paint, so that's that. That
plus one.
Some musicians are great. Tom is very good at art and can paint and draw so well. But yeah, you're in that creative bracket. And then a lot of musicians, especially in the UK, go into teaching, whether they're teaching full-time or they're playing professionally. It's quite common in London to play professionally but also have a teaching job, whether it's in music college or school. So a lot of my friends that are playing professionally, it's not a full-time, you know, it's various gigs and then they're teaching. So I found that I really enjoyed teaching, and I enjoyed it for those relationships you build with the children and the inspiring and all of that. But what I found really hard was in the education system. So even though I was in the Caribbean, it was English education system. So I was used to that from the UK, but it's very structured. And there's only so much creativity you can input into such a structured outline and topics you have to cover. So I feel like the creativity was limited. And then once I stepped over into photography, I had that creative side back. So I realized how much I was missing creating and not having such a big framework that I had to work within, if that makes sense.
Okay,
so it was mine again. And especially working for myself and running my own business, I can photograph how I want to photograph. And if I put out what I love, people that also love those will book me from that. So yeah, so going back to that, definitely the creativity, that was the main thing. In terms of other skills, being a musician is very social, right? And I know you love to talk, as we've said before.
I feel offended, yeah.
I mean, what's lovely about music college, you get such a mix of people, right? So you have big extroverts, you have introverts, you have the in-between, you have some people that are really extrovert and they're performing, and then you talk to them on a social level and they're actually really shy. So it's interesting. Where was I going with this? Ah, yes, with meeting people. So I feel that for my job now, and as a photographer, but in weddings, so I am only weddings at the moment, because the work is there and I'm lucky and I'm booked as a wedding photographer, which is great. But every day you go into, you're meeting completely new people. Yes, you would have had a call with a couple, so you've met, but you still don't know them. And suddenly you're thrown into a room with their closest family in the morning. And there's a lot of reading people. And I feel that as a musician, we got used to reading a lot of different personalities. You know, being in a woodwind section, you've normally got so many personalities, even just with eight players, and you kind of know how to speak to some people differently to another person and all of that. So yeah, reading people and knowing when to talk and knowing when not to, I feel like that's a skill that's very helpful for me, and I expect for a lot going into a lot of other jobs as well.
Yes. So, Lauren, thank you very much. This is the first time I'm hearing this from someone I'm interviewing.
Yeah.
Maybe it's also because of the job that they now have, but I can just assure you that I feel that's the same, like reacting on other people, how they are, just being possible to not change your behavior, but just accepting how they are and working with it.
Yes.
I feel that this also why I'm in a job in account management right now, where I meet a lot of people that have like projects with different communities, and just being able to say, hey, I take you how you are and let's see what we can do with it.
Yeah, I think it's so important because no one is the same, and reading people's emotions is such a helpful and important skill. Yeah,
very, very good.
I'm glad you can relate.
Would you say there is something besides the actual playing the music? Is there something you miss on being a musician, or is it just okay how it is right now?
I would say I think it's okay. What I loved about it as well was the community. you know, and you find the group of people you love. And Tom, obviously playing in an orchestra, he has his group that he hangs out with, and the community is great. But I feel that in any profession that you're in, you find a community.
Yeah.
You know, so even though a lot of weddings I do on my own, we still have a community of friends that you're in touch with online, and mm-hmm. you meet outside of work and all of that. So I think community for any job, whether you're in music or what you're thinking of going into, or if anyone listening is thinking of other things, like, you will find a community in any profession.
And would you say now that the decision going outside of the music world was, in hindsight, you say it was a good thing, or was it?
I would say, I feel like it was a great idea to do what I'm doing. So I have no regrets. I would say during my teaching years, there were some times that I thought, you know, even though I'm in a comfortable job and I have a salary and life is good, I would think, should I have pushed the playing? Like, should I have tried harder and tried to get a job? So there were times then, but definitely not now. I think that was more my late 20s when I thought, oh, could it have been something? And I think we can do this for any decision, any big decision in life. There's so many things that we can go all in, but we can't do everything. And I think the older you get, the more you're okay with your decisions.
Yeah.
And I think when you're younger, they seem so much bigger because
yeah.
you have as much responsibility. Like, you are just you and your life, and what are you going to do? So
yeah.
I did for a while come back to it and think, have I made the right decision? And mm-hmm. I think because some of my friends were in jobs, and my other half, you know, he went straight into the orchestral world and has stayed in the orchestral world. So because I was seeing it all the time. Yeah, I think that probably was why I questioned. But for years, since being a photographer, I have not questioned it at all.
So. Yeah, interesting. My significant other is also playing in the orchestra. And for me, it helped a lot getting to know her colleagues and being in the social music group, because they're all very nice and I like it very much. So no bad words to anyone I've met through my wife, but it's okay to have something else. My reason was more the people than the music itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see it over and over again. And still, I'm meeting them for a beer and stuff like this. But
yeah.
for me, it helped a lot of getting to know a new sphere of people, because you are very in your bubble with the music. Although my parents were also not musicians, but my father was accordion teacher. So a little bit like this.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, getting to know, like, seeing something else was very helpful for me. And then seeing what I could have gone into helped me also to realize.
Yeah, of course. Do you know what? Just saying that, it's made me remember, it's opened up a memory, but I do remember going back to do it. So for me, I did the undergrad, so the 4 years,
yeah,
and then went to do the teaching masters, which is only a year. But I do remember having that time, you know, 22, 23, before I knew what was coming after teacher training, of having this almost like feeling like you failed a bit. So you've gone to study to be a performer and have that feeling of, oh, everyone, it's that worry of what does everyone think of me? And, you know, the people that were going into playing, I remember having a hard time of being like, do they think I'm a failure? And I think it's so easy to be in that bubble again of not trying to be a selfish person, but we do naturally think from our own perspective a lot of the time, because it's our lives and we're the main character in our life, of course. But, I feel like that age, it's really hard. And I think if anyone's listening and they're in that position of feeling like, oh, if I don't carry on playing, even if my it's not there, then I'm going to, people will think I'm a failure, or I will be a failure. And it's so not true. And actually, when you realize that people aren't thinking about you, you know, in a nice way, like everyone's got their own life, and you realize, like, everyone wants you to be happy. And if you are just living your life, whatever you are doing, that'd be nice. Sorry, it's got a bit deep and meaningful, but I just thought about that. And I do remember there was a time that I felt like a failure, even though I was there doing a teaching master's. And then it was an interesting year, I would say, for me. Definitely. Yeah.
I know what you mean and what you're referring to. I just want to add, I want everybody to be miserable. So maybe I'm the
I'm the exception.
Yeah, see, I want everyone to be happy, but I forget you're Mr. Negative. So,
just as a like a wrapping up question, I'm interested about is like the classical music still? Would you consider it your hobby? Do you still listen to a lot of classical music? Do you come back to it? Or
I would say no. I don't. I hardly listen to any. But then it's interesting because for me before, even growing up and while studying, it was never my passion to listen to it. I always enjoyed playing more so. So I loved listening when there was a project coming up and really getting into the music at the time. So yep. I suppose that hasn't changed from pre-playing. So it's not like I've gone, oh, I hate classical music, I won't listen to it.
Yeah.
I love listening to live music. So I'll go to some of Tom's concerts or sometimes other ones. And I've always enjoyed the live music over recordings of music. Yep. So yeah, in terms of what I listen to at home, it's not classical.
Yeah, okay. Okay. And now for the foreseeable future, like the really last question, do you think in your like from your personality there will be another step this big then from oboe to photography? Maybe, yeah, I mean, if you build your photography empire now with hundreds of employees, it's not as big as oboe to photography, but will
That's
you
true.
Leap
That's
do another big. Leap of faith to somewhere? Is it
Ooh.
Like something you want to pursue or
yeah. Do you know what, I think this is a great question and I do get asked it sometimes and maybe you get it as well, I don't know. But I always say that I'll never say no to anything. So I think my main motto is if you can survive on a day to day and look after yourself, like whatever, it's not like you need to be earning crazy amounts of money. Like as long as you've got a life that's comfortable for you, whatever that is, then I'm very much about doing what you want to do, like, and trying things out. So yeah, for me, the photography at the moment is great and I'm so happy and at, you know, for the next quite a few years, I know that I'll be happy. But I do, yeah, I always say never because, you know, another 10-year cycle could go and then suddenly Lauren goes, oh, I need something else and maybe I'll try something else. But I don't know. I
potato farmer.
Yeah, maybe. I do like potatoes. Yeah, so for now I'm happy, but I almost in a conversation never want to say, right, this is it, this is what I'm doing, because I feel like you're shutting the door just by saying to people. And whereas I just think there's so many things out there and many things in life can make us change what we want to do, you know, and things happen in families and you might want to move to be in a different area if that means being closer to family, and that there's so many factors in life and we don't know as we go through. So never say never, just see where the path takes you.
Okay, Lauren, then I really want to thank you so much for taking part in this. We only did chat via Instagram or messages through the last 8 to 10 years. We didn't talk for a very long time.
No,
it was really great having you here in this episode, and I'm looking forward for meeting you the next time.
Yes, I can't wait. Thank you so much for having me.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Yeah, and this is how the first English episode of the podcast Was ganz anderes ends. And for me, it was a really good experience meeting and talking to Lauren again, because we didn't do this for quite some years. And I remembered why we got along this well. And I remember this when Lauren described how her decision-making process was when thinking about doing something else, plus how she thinks about what and how she benefited from her music studies. And you noticed it during the interview. I could really relate to. So this was really, really good. The photography thing, I visited Lauren, I think, in 2009 or 2010 in her hometown in Cornwall, Truro. And yeah, the landscape there is so beautiful and it's so nice and such a nice coastline. You have the North Sea, you have somewhat of the ocean on the north end of Cornwall. Yeah, and I remember how beautiful this was. And also, I remember the first photos Lauren posted, maybe back on Facebook when she moved to the Cayman Islands. So Lauren was always surrounded by beautiful scenery and landscapes, which I think could benefit her skills as a photographer. But she moved on to people. I don't know about that, but yeah, she's doing very good. I put her Instagram in the show notes of this episode, and you can find her profile there. The main driver of when to start and how to start something like completely different after the studying of becoming a music teacher and moving to the Cayman Islands was this feeling of I should do something else, and I should do something I'm heavily engaged with and which is fun, and I should try it out. And Lauren always had the safety net of, okay, I can still teach the oboe or the violin or whatever, and I can start a little bit with the photography, and it worked. And then after she built something up, and then when she already had like a safety net in the new business, the photography thing, after networking with her colleagues, other photographers from the industry, she found her peers, she got recommended, and now she can do it full time and enjoys it very much. And this is also a great story, I think, that, yeah, since it's the first English episode, I guess some of the listeners won't be able to understand the other episodes so much. But from the previous interviews, it was always like a hard cut. My both interview partners decided, now it's time to stop and I need to do something else. And with Lauren, it was a little bit different. And therefore, in the sense of the interview and the like the podcast feed, that you want to get different experiences is very good. So it doesn't need to be necessarily to be a hard cut. You can also start something new, grow it, make it bigger, make it sustainable. And then once there's I think in most cases, the conflict of time, because you can't do both enough to make a like comfortable living, or you don't want to do anymore. So then you need to switch, but it's not necessary to like do a hard cut and do something else. Yeah. So I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you stayed with me until here, although cutting and like doing the nitty gritty in this episode in the after work you have to do it's not so cool listening to yourself not speaking in your mother tongue. Okay, sorry to all native English speaker or people that can speak better than I do. I want to thank all of you who listened until here. If you have someone in mind who should be my guest, this could also be in English, tell him, tell her. She can reach out via my Instagram page. It's also linked down below in the show notes. If you enjoyed it very much and you're listening on Apple Podcasts and or on Spotify, I'd really appreciate 5-star rating. 4-star ratings are also accepted, but 5-star is better. And besides this, you can subscribe to the podcast. I guess I will do another English episode as well, but I won't make any promises because these tend to fail. Anyway, it was nice to meet Lauren, and yeah, see you soon.